You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Like some bad movie.
All right, we are back.
Yes, Sensei.
Yeah. What'd you call me? There we go.
Welcome to Movie Sucktastic, everybody. I'm Scott. That's Joey, and we're reviewing one battle after another from 2025.
Yeah,
one of the Oscar films.
I apologize if I'm a little bit phlegmy. I'm a little bit coffee. I'm just getting over a cold that my wife gave to me. So here's the thing.
Yeah.
She went to the doctors, right?
Uh-oh.
Well, she did. And she went and got medicine. And you know how they tell you, you know, take this for 5 days and finish all the medicine? She's notorious for not doing that.
You have to finish the course.
She doesn't ever do it. She just doesn't do it. So I guess she was contagious just a bit longer to get me sick. But it's okay. I'm at the end of it. It's almost gone. I feel better every day. So
that's good.
Yeah. So, but I apologize if you know a little bit of that tonight. Sorry.
Right. So one battle after another is the front runner for one of the front runners for Best Picture.
I would say one of the front runners, but it is heavily favored. We'll put it that way.
Right.
It's got a lot of nominations. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to kick this off immediately, and we're just going to do that real quick and just get it out of the way.
Okay.
So I think it's up for 13. Yeah, 13. So next to Sinners, it was the most nominated film. So here, let's do these super quick. It's nominated for Best Picture. It's got a nomination for that new Best Casting category. Best Cinematography. Best Original Score, which I firmly believe it will win, and if it doesn't, it better win. The score for this film is phenomenal. It just is phenomenal. Best Sound, Best Director, Best Actor in a Leading Role for Leonardo DiCaprio, Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Benicio Del Toro, Best Actor in a Supporting Role, Sean Penn, Best Actress in a Supporting Role, Tiana Taylor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Paul Thomas Anderson, Best Production Design, and Best Film Editing. I don't think any of the actor categories are going to be won by them. I think they will go to other people.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paul Thomas Anderson takes Best Picture and Director. I think he's going to have a great night. Screenplay? I don't know. Screenplay.
I think it's up against Hamnet as far as like everybody's excited about it. So
there's competition in that category. You got Begonia, Frankenstein, Hamnet, and Train Dreams. Mm-hmm. All in my opinion, worthy of the nomination.
Definitely.
Does this win? I don't know. This is going to be one of those categories where, excuse me. I'm probably going to get wrong. You know, I'm going to go with, you know, my heart. You know, I always say I should go with my gut, not my heart. So, You know, it's one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's probably going to go to Hamnet, but I'll probably...
Or Adapted, Yeah,
I'll probably pick One Battle, but I don't know. What else? Tianya Taylor? I really don't know if she deserves that nomination. I'm serious. As far as a character in the movie, she was my least favorite. I was happy that when she disappeared, she didn't come back, because it wasn't really about her after she leaves. And I was happy about that.
It's about her absence.
I was happy that she did not come back, because I thought the movie was much better for it. Not because I didn't enjoy her performance. I thought it was fine. I don't think it's worthy of a nomination, but I thought it was fine. I just think it's a better movie with her out of it, because, again, it's not about her. It's about her leaving and the things that come from
it. Is it the character you didn't like, what the character did, or...
No.
You just don't like the actress?
Oh, I don't... No, the actress... Yeah, she's fine. The actress is fine. No, the character... was fine. I just was really okay with her being gone.
Okay. All right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. So obviously the film has two parts. Is the first part where it's the kind of beginning, the setup, where it's... I forget if it mentions the time period specifically, but it's...
I mean, it's modern day, but yeah. It's, you know...
With like a 17, 18 year gap,
something like that. I forget
how old the daughter is.
She's like 16. I want to say it's 15, 16 years later. I'm almost positive.
So there's that gap, and the whole thing surrounds this group called the French 75.
Yes, I believe so.
Right, named after artillery or something. They're kind of like the weathermen back in the old day.
Right. Yeah, and you know they're
weather underground. That's what I'm trying to say. I'm confusing it, but they're a subversive, I guess you could say, homegrown terrorist organization.
Sure.
They're rebels. Yeah, they're rebels, and they're rebelling against... in the film, they're rebelling against ICE and other forms of the government that tend to prey on oppressed people.
Right, like the Border Patrol and things like that, so...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was very... I mean, I don't... We weren't really as deep in the whole ICE situation now as then when they were filming this. So I think it's a bit fortuitous for the film that it becomes even more relevant than when it was when it was first started.
I mean, I think it's one of the engines for this movie being the front runner. Because between when it came out and the things that have transpired in Minneapolis, it pushed this movie way in front.
It makes the film very relevant, and the extremely. It's not like the film got a boost from that, because I think the film's too good to say that, oh, it got a boost because this happened. But it's just more like the film was just that good that it really was able to capture that feeling, the feeling that we're actually under right now, with that aspect of it. Obviously, with a film that's so politically charged, you do have people of different political sides that aren't going to like the film because of how it portrays their, you know, the party that they tend to align with, or the side they tend to align with.
Right.
At least if they're that myopic in their understanding of groups and situations. So there are going to be people that don't like the film just because it in some ways glorifies those on the left who are performing these, terroristic acts on American soil.
The extreme left.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The Antifa, if you will. Have you seen Eddington yet?
I haven't.
Okay.
Well, you know what it is? It's one of those movies that Mare says, oh, I want to see that. And then me, like a butthead, I wait around far too long.
She doesn't want to see it. Just watch it.
Okay. I'm going to do it. there's at least 10 TV shows that we've started, and I've waited.
Sir, preaching to the choir.
Perfect example. Before we move on, Ozark. I've started that show 3 times. The first time was with her. First episode, absolutely amazing. And then she says, we need to take a break. I'm like, what? We need to take a break. Why? This show is too intense. I'm like, what? It's like, why? Okay, fine. We'll take a quick break. Then, literally, 2 years goes by. I start watching it on my own. She walks in. Oh, I thought we were going to watch this together. No, it's been 2 years. And then she goes, no, we can watch it together. I'm like, fine. Another year goes by. Yeah, now we're talking 3 years. And then I start watching it again on my own. And then she pulls that shit again. Because the show just keeps getting better and better. And it's been 6 months. I'm going crazy. Going crazy. Sorry. I feel like I had to vent. Sometimes the show is therapy. I don't know.
Right. So one battle after another, like you're right with Perfidia. She is kind of a duplicitous character. You're not really you're given a lot of reasons not to like her, especially when she rats on her friends and skips town on her daughter.
Right. Well, she has an affair with Sean Penn. And
yeah, that too.
So there's a part of her that I think enjoys that, and there's a part of her that's doing it to save her ass.
Oh no, it's all because she enjoys it.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
When she stopped enjoying it, it was to save her ass, and then when she was not really concerned about that so much, she just dropped him. You know,
right?
You know, she was leading him on.
So. But it's her betrayal. Of not only the French 75, but also of Bob, Leonardo DiCaprio's character. Yep. Because obviously this is not his child he's raising. He doesn't not aware of that. It belongs to the Sean Penn, who I love his walk in this film. That stick up his ass.
Oh, dude.
That was my exact words.
I was like, he's got a giant stick right up his ass.
I think one review I read said it's like he was pegged once and he's been wanting it ever since.
And you know, Sean Penn is so method. You never know. Might have had something up there.
I don't want to thoughts. I don't want to think. Stop that.
I mean, he's dedicated to his craft.
Right, and all this comes into play because. Sean Penn's character, Colonel Lockjaw. Love the names in this film.
Yeah.
My favorite is Jungle Pussy because that's her actual stage name.
Oh, is it really?
That's what I heard.
Oh, that's funny.
But Sean Penn's character Lockjaw. You're right. He bangs Perfidia and knocks her up. So then
let's not get too ahead. They go on a raid. And she corners him, and she makes him have an erection in front of her through his pants, and he gets off on it, and that's how that whole thing started. Like, she went there and did the job she needed to do, but she cornered him and kind of made him, like, submissive, and he dug it.
Yeah, I made him submissive, but there's this whole.
But she had a gun pointed at him, so I mean.
But yeah. There's a power play going on here. There's definitely a submissive, dominant relationship between these two. Perfidia is obviously the dominant one,
right.
Even in the relationship with Bob. He's more like the mother of the two.
Right.
And is left holding the bag, being both the father and the mother when she splits town. So the fact that none of it means anything except all these years later, Sean Penn's Lockjaw's loyalty to the white race comes into question when he tries to join the
Christmas tree party,
The Christmas Adventurers
or some club. Shit. Yeah.
And at first I thought it was stupid, and but the more you think about it, what better symbol for white nationalists than Santa Claus?
Right, and keep Christ in Christmas.
So he wants to get into this secretive right wing group that worships Santa Claus, and they're like, there's a rumor going around that you may have there's a rumor that it might have a half Negro daughter, it was a mixed race. What kind of race? No other way to say this, sir. Just like
right.
Oh, yeah! I love how they played the racist in this film. It's great. And again, a lot of people on the right were pissed off, not because that they like these, and not because they were white nationalists, but because they made the white nationalists look stupid.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So well, of course, they're stupid. The white nationalists.
Right. So, but then Sean Penn also, because you know he wants to be in this party and he wants to continue being in the party, he decides to go find her himself so he can do a DNA test.
Right.
Because if it is his child, he's gonna try and make her disappear. If it isn't, then he doesn't have to do anything.
So the storyline, I mean, there's not only is there a layer of like the sins of the father situation, but on the level of like the revolution or rebellion, the film kind of shows the overlapping of generations when it comes to like fights that they have to make on like a civil or a governmental, you know, level.
Right.
And this kind of rebellion is inherited from one generation to the next. It's what they do with it that matters. So that comes into play as well.
Yeah. No. You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Absolutely. And the interesting thing, I love Leonardo DiCaprio's character because he is just, he's just getting high all the time. He's, you know, so he's with this underground group. And before him and his daughter kind of go, not underground, but like they just kind of disappear, fake names, all that stuff. He gets these radios from one of the guys in the underground and basically says, this is on a special frequency. If another person has this, you trust them with your life. So he keeps them around the house just in case. And then all of a sudden, you know, one of those radios goes off, you know, and he's talking into it. Oh, no. He calls on the radio. Right? Isn't that what happens? Because he finds out that someone's looking for him and his daughter. Because she goes to the school dance, and they go and intercept her.
Yeah, they get to her, and then he's trying to find her.
Right.
And then
the girl and the woman that goes to find her has one of those radios with the special frequencies, so that's why she trusts her. And then they go out like in the middle of nowhere,
and they get the passphrase too. Don't forget the passphrase. They have that passphrase too.
Oh right.
The Green Acres and all that shit.
Right. Which he forgets, right?
Yeah, well, he forgets everything. It's great.
Half baked all the time.
I love when he gets the first call and they're talking in code and everything. And every time they tell him something in code, he's like, "Oh yeah, you mean Steve, right?" And he's like blurting all this stuff out onto the lines. I love it, and he keeps doing it all throughout the film, and it's just great. And it's like also this film was aggressively pro drunk driving. Did you notice that at all?
Yes.
At no point do we shake a finger at Benicio or Leonardo
right.
during their drunken driving, just like, casually.
Here, have a beer.
Yeah.
Just, you know what? I mean, those are some tense moments. I probably would have had a beer. I probably would have partook, to be completely honest. If I was in that exact situation, well, how much fucking worse can it get? Yes, I'm going to have a beer.
Yeah.
I'm not driving. You're driving. I'm going to drink the beer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Benicio del Toro's character was like more understated. He's up for best supporting, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know if either of them deserve like best supporting. No, like, I mean, they were both good.
Who else is up for best supporting? You got Delroy Lindo for Sinners, which I think that's going to be who wins. No. I thought I looked down at the paper in my peripheral. I thought you were shaking your head. Jacob Elordi for Frankenstein, Stellan Skarsgård for Sentimental Value. I don't think Benicio del Toro, he already won for Traffic, so he's good. And I think everyone kind of knows that in the back of their head. Sean Penn has won like twice already, two best actors.
What about Frankenstein?
I think your competition goes to either Jacob Elordi for Frankenstein or Delroy Lindo for Sinners. And I think it's going to go to Delroy Lindo. He's been making movies for a million years. And I would say that he doesn't always make good movies. So you don't know the very next time he's ever going to get nominated. Maybe never again. But he was also amazing in Sinners. So I would be giving it to Delroy Lindo if I was voting personally, just because I think he was that good. Jacob Elordi, yeah, he's got many, many, many nominations coming.
It's a valid argument.
And he'll probably win as well. But he's got many nominations coming. Many. You know, he'll probably get nominated for something he is going to do this year. I don't know if Wuthering Heights will be that, but seriously, he's probably going to have dozens of nominations coming his way. So, yeah, I think it's going to Delroy Lindo. That's my gut. That's just what it is. Thomas Anderson, you know, Scott and I have talked about him. He tends to make movies that the Academy really enjoys. Most of the things that he makes does get nominated for Best Picture.
He's hit or miss with me.
Yeah. I mean, I usually tend to like everything he does. I don't love everything he does, but I tend to like everything he does. You know, like Boogie Nights, love that. There Will Be Blood, love that.
Magnolia.
I like Magnolia, and I will defend Magnolia. Scott does not like Magnolia. We should.
But is I'm that on the
wheel?
Revisit.
Is that on the wheel? It should go on the wheel.
I think it is. I'll double check. Just because I think it is on the wheel.
We need to review that at some point, so it should go on the wheel.
Yeah, and you know it's been decades. I'm willing to revisit it.
Yeah. Licorice Pizza.
No.
I liked Licorice Pizza. I didn't love.
Not cares for pizza. It.
You know, so it's things like that. Punk Drunk Love, I love Punk Drunk Love, you know, but like his masterpiece, this has got to be it. This and Boogie Nights. I mean, There Will Be Blood, as I think, could also be in that conversation. So I would say, in my opinion, he's overdue for a Best Picture. I think he is, because he wasn't even nominated for Boogie Nights. He was for There Will Be Blood, didn't win, probably should have. And, you know, now he's nominated for this. I think he's going to win for this.
Yeah, I think so. And even if you look at it from a non-artistic standpoint, I think, like, again, this film is so relevant today in what's going on that I think there's sometimes that has to come into play, too.
Sure, and you know everyone that's voting, they know that. So, and whether they know it or not,
they are subconsciously motivated or influenced by living in the world we live in right now.
That is true.
So it's true. It's contextually
true.
A part of it.
Yeah, it's you know they don't ever release you know the numbers. Oh, you know it won by you know this many votes. They don't do that. But I would feel that if they did, you would be surprised at how many votes this movie is going to get to win. I think it's not even close. I think this is your best picture. And I think you know, most people are going to be voting that way. I mean, because, all right, look at its competition. You got Begonia, F1, Frankenstein, Hamnet, Marty Supreme, Secret Agent, Sentimental Value, Sinners, and Train Dreams. Its competition, the very next film to possibly take it, if it's not One Battle After Another, it's got to be Sinners, just because of its popularity. And either Hamnet or Marty Supreme. Those
agreed.
You know, that's kind of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to One Battle. I really do. I really, really do. This is the longest movie in the list, I believe. 2 hours, 45 minutes, 46 minutes.
Yeah, I think that does it.
I think it's the longest movie.
Wasn't the Secret Agent close?
2 hours, 40. This is 2 hours, 41. Secret Agent, 2 hours, 40.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, everybody else. Yeah, this is the longest movie. And it beats the Secret Agent by 1 minute.
But I tell you, I was not bored during this film. The film's got a flow to it. It's got plenty of action sequences, and
the score alone is its own tense, suspenseful. You know, mm-hmm. It's its own tense, suspenseful act. I mean, like it does its own thing. And it's a supporting character, in my opinion. When they're driving and it's building up to, you know, getting from point A to point B. And I'm not just...
You mean the hill sequence?
I'm talking about any sequence. That about? Score is there in multiple areas. Just pick your, okay. You know, take your pick is what I'm getting at. So it's like the score, it just builds and builds and builds. And then it gets there and it's like, holy shit. Like, and you realize that what you've been watching and, like, there hasn't been any talking. It's been just music. And it has gone on for, like, 8 minutes. And it's a testament to that because you're not bored. You're paying attention to what's happening. And you're really just watching what's happening and listening to music with no dialogue. And it works. So, I mean, mm-hmm. that right there is a big, big deal. To me, anyway, as far as, you know, the score moving a film. You know, it's like The Killers of the Flower Moon. It's when we talked about that, there was a scene in particular that was, without the music in the background, that scene doesn't work. The music in the background that they use for that one scene where they're looking out into the field and things are on fire, without music, I imagine it would be considered boring and you're not paying attention and you just, okay, let's get to the next part. But the score that they were using during the scene, done the right way, it absolutely just changes the dynamic. And that's what One Battle does from literally beginning to end. The score, that's why it's going to win best score, is because the score is such a huge part of the film. And it's a huge part of how the film moves and feels. Without it, it's the movie isn't as good. With it, it's a masterpiece. Without it, you probably still enjoy it, but it is not as good without the score. That's how good mm-hmm. the score is. So, so anyway, that's my take on it.
Anyway,
it's like, who's up for score in there? Since I've been talking about it so much, I may as well just bring it up real quick. You have Begonia, also an excellent score, by the way. Frankenstein, Hamnet, and Sinners. There's no competition here at all. Begonia, maybe only because the score in that movie is similar to how it's done in One Battle, where the score in Begonia is like the score in One Battle, where it will is like a supporting actor, actress for the scene or scenes. Oh. That's how they did the score in Begonia. So I would say the only competition is Begonia, but it ain't going to Begonia. It is absolutely going to One Battle. So.
All right. What do you think about rating this?
What's it currently rated at? This got to be up near an 8 or over an 8. Oh, 7.7. No, it deserves to be.
That's awfully low.
It deserves to be much, much higher than that. I mean.
What's your starting bid?
Starting would be a 9.
I agree.
I would start at a 9, and I could easily be talked into a 10 because I think this film is that good.
Honestly, I'm okay with a 10 on this one, too.
Yeah, I think this movie, it's everything it should be. It's everything that you want in a film. It just, it's long, but is never boring at any point, you know, as you mentioned. Now, this is a perfect film. Paul Thomas Anderson deserves every accolade he gets for this movie. So,
yeah.
No, it's pretty fucking awesome movie.
And I agree.
And Mara and I watched it in one sitting. She didn't pull the let's watch half and finish the other half later. She didn't do that with me. Thankfully. Yeah, no, I'm good with a 10. We don't give out 10s very often.
This is the leading film of the year. It seems almost like a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, minimum score would have been a 9. I'm good with a 10. You know, it's funny. Like, the last time we gave a 10 out, was that Nightcrawler?
No, we've given a couple of 10s out.
Yeah? Okay.
Yeah. But Nightcrawler is one of them.
What have we given 10s? There can't be that many.
Probably Nocturnal Animals.
Oh, I love Nocturnal Animals.
See, there you go.
Fuck. And that's a movie. Let me tell you something. And we don't have time to do it. But that's a movie that deserved way, way more than one fucking Oscar nomination, which was Best Supporting Actor for Michael Shannon.
It should have been up for adapted screenplay.
That should have been up for adapted. It should have been up for director. It should have been up for picture. Should have been up for actor. Cinematography. I mean, that movie is so fucking good. So fucking good, because there's two angles to that movie. You have the book that he wrote.
Don't get too into it.
I know. But, you know, if this is my chance to get people to watch it,
I think you've already given a stunning recommendation.
It's a fucking snub, man. That movie came out, what, 2015? I think it was 2015. Again, we don't have time, but it just definitely should have been recognized more. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Because I guarantee you, if we were to go and look and see what else was nominated and all that shit, there's definitely movies that could have been taken out and that one put in. All right. So let's go ahead and end this episode. Let's do that.
Okay. Sure.
All right, let's see here. I forgot to bring up my sound effects here. Here we go. All right. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Yet another episode of Movie Sucktastic. We just finished reviewing One Battle After Another, episode 470. You can go to our website at moviesucktastic.com. And you can download our shows there. You can listen to the shows right from the website. And you can also click on the YouTube link. And you can watch the episode that we just recorded as well. So, you can also go to iTunes. You can listen to the show there as well. You can go to Facebook.com/MovieSucktastic. And you can see everything that's been posted there. You can go to Letterboxd.com/MovieSucktastic. And you can see everything that Scott's posting that way. You can leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. You can also email us at themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. You can download our podcast player at moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk, or just download your favorite podcast player for whatever device you're using and just do a search for Movie Sucktastic, and every single episode is there. We are on multiple streaming services such as Amazon Music, Spotify. We are on iHeartRadio. You name it, I've submitted us everywhere. You can just do a browser search for Movie Sucktastic, and you'll find everything for it. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Viva Red Revolution!
Oh.
Messed that up. Viva Red Revolution! I can't
Viva
say
la Revolution. Revolution!
Yeah, Viva La Revolution apparently is a big stumbling block for me phonetically.
There you go. It's okay.
Yeah. Unacceptable.
It's fine. You did it, though. All right, everybody. We will talk to you next time when we review our final Oscar film, The Secret Agent.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.